To say that Nova Scotia was strongly opposed to this union would be an egregious understatement. Joseph Howe's petition to the UK Parliament is more likened to that of a condensed novel. After having read 33 heartfelt, passionate, and critical pages, it would not be hard to understand his dumbfoundedness. This narrator found it difficult to understand how not one item he brought up was not reasonably taken into account by any Parliament member. But in order to understand what was really happening, you had to go back in time to 1861 and the events of the Civil War. Britain not only did it assist the Confederacy from 1861 to 1865, but had joined in the conspiracy along with France, Spain, and Austria. The plan was to divide North America up between them. In 1861, a delegation from England, France, and Spain agreed to a joint intervention in Mexican affairs. Emperor Maximilian, brother of Franz Joseph of Austria, was to be placed on the throne of Mexico. Louisiana, which extended from the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian border, was to be returned to France. The northern states were to be defeated and returned to England as colonies. Great Britain spent $5,000 on her own navy and embarked some 8,000 troops to Canada to attack Lincoln from Toronto. The Confederate South was to be free and retain their slaves. Charles Bruce, British consul at Charleston, South Carolina, was the go-between to arrange the marketing of Confederate bonds in Britain. These were to provide the funds to build a navy of privateers for the Confederacy. Most of the ships were constructed by Laird and Son at Birkenhead and included the Alabama, Georgia, Shenandoah, Tallahassee, Florida, Cluster, and Sea King with their auxiliaries. British from keel to mast, armed with British guns, manned with British tars, and outfitted with British supplies. The headquarters and pay office of the Confederate Navy was Liverpool. These ships sacked $15 million worth of U.S. merchant shipping. With the Union blocking the ports, the Confederate Navy could not land. The Spanish fleet, at the time, was in Cuban waters and arrived in Veracruz December 14, 1861. The British and French arrived in January of 1862. France supplied 38,000 troops for this campaign. Russia, being sympathetic with Lincoln's freeing of the slaves, had other plans to disrupt the European allies' scheme. Russia knew it would not be able to hold Alaska if Lincoln was defeated, so he sent his Baltic squadron to New York and his Pacific squadron to San Francisco. The last thing Britain wanted was to be in another war with Russia. Britain also understood that if they continued to support the Confederates, that the risk of war with Russia would only increase. Great Britain and Spain withdrew from Veracruz, leaving the French the burden of supporting Emperor Maximilian in Mexico. Maximilian was eventually taken prisoner, court-martialed, and shot along with two of his generals. After Lincoln won the Civil War, France was informed, in plain terms, that the U.S. would not tolerate a French force or existence of any foreign monarch in Mexico. In 1866, Napoleon ordered the general in Mexico to withdraw his troops. Napoleon himself had come over to North America, where he had lived on his yacht anchored off St. Helens Island in the harbor of Montreal, where the present seaway had just been opened. The United States was looking for claims to the damages incurred by Britain in the aiding of the Confederate Army's destruction of her merchant ships, along with a formal apology. This dragged on for quite some time. Some would say that MacDonald had an illustrious career. Others would not purport to that idea at all. To say his career as a politician was rocky would be an understatement. Between resignations, defeats, railroad bribery scandals, loss of confidence by his own party, shady political deals, direct involvement in the execution of Louis Riel, public drunkenness, alienation of the colony, to a Chinese head tax up until recently, still unresolved. Most would consider these not qualities befitting our first prime minister. This next particularly egregious act should have sent him into the history books as a traitor. When it came time to take the Quebec resolutions to the London conference, the Canadian delegates included Tilley, Tupper, Archibald, and MacDonald. On the eve of the delegation leaving, Tilley received a letter from MacDonald stating he would not be able to join the delegation right away, as armed parties of men had invaded Ontario from the U.S. and that citizens were being enlisted to fend off the raids. On no account change any of the provisions of the resolution, for if you do, it may mean an entire reopening of the negotiations with the provinces and the consequent disruption of our plans. The delegates arrive in London, and after several unsuccessful attempts to get the resolutions in front of the Parliament, they sat and cooled their heels while waiting for MacDonald to arrive. It was most likely in the latter part of 1865, MacDonald, in a speech lasting 4 hours, spoke to the House and notified them that he had received notice from a U.S. statesman, claiming, if the U.S. and Great Britain did not agree to the settlement of claims over England sinking Union ships in the Civil War, that war between the two countries would break out and Canada would be invaded. What to do was the question. If the United States annexed Canada, and it was admitted Britain could not defend the boundary of Canada, Britain would still have to pay the indemnity demanded by the United States for the loss of her merchant marine. This was ruinous. If Britain conceded to Canada the right to form a federal union, this would mean that Canada would have a democratic government on par with the United States. This was unthinkable. Canada would most probably join with the United States against Britain. This would be worse. The feeling was that Britain had to retain Canada as far as possible to satisfy the claims of the United States. Therefore, Britain would be compelled to buy off John A. MacDonald. MacDonald, of course, knew all of this. In 1865, when he addressed the House of Commons, Britain had been most emphatic in denying any responsibility for damages resulting from the activities of the privateers. It was true that these ships were constructed in British yards by private citizens, but as Britain had not declared war, the government was not responsible. Great Britain finally agreed to an impartial tribunal of arbitration, only after the United States threatened to annex Canada, and the U.S. Congress had in fact written up a lengthy schedule of terms for the annexing of Canada. By accepting to negotiate, Great Britain admitted that the government was responsible for the losses sustained by the American Merchant Marine. Before emigrating to Canada, John A. MacDonald had started his schooling in Scotland. He was now 54 and a widower. Naturally, he was elated when the Right Honorable Montagu Barnard invited him to his home to meet a number of titled nobility. He was wined and dined and lionized by the elite and soon engaged to be married. What man of 54 would or could resist attention showered upon him by a young and titled lady who had consented to be his bride? His future brother-in-law now found John sufficiently softened up to be not invulnerable to the explanations and suggestions he would make to him. He explained that because of the likelihood of war with the United States, in which no doubt several Canadians would be killed, it would be impossible for the House of Commons to accede to the request of Canada for a federal union. In a document from Queen Victoria, she's seen granting full power to the five representatives of that tribunal of arbitration. The list of names speaks for itself. It will be noted that our trusty and well-loved Sir John Alexander MacDonald had been appointed one of the High Commissioners to be representative of Great Britain. Of our trusty and well-beloved Sir John Alexander MacDonald, Knight Commander of our Most Honorable Order of the Bath, a member of our Privy Council for Canada, and Minister of Justice, and Attorney General in our Dominion of Canada. They were married on February 16, 1867. In 1871, it was finally mutually agreed that the case is decided by an impartial tribunal of arbitration to be held in Washington. Regarding the Board of Arbitration, whose decisions were incorporated into the Treaty of Washington, May 8, 1871, it will doubtless be conceded that if United States were compelled to relinquish equal rights to navigation of the Mississippi River, or if Britain were compelled to relinquish equal rights to navigation of the Thames, it would be sufficient cause to declare war. Yet Canada was compelled by the terms of this treaty to relinquish equal rights to navigation of the St. Lawrence, where it traverses the province of Quebec, to relinquish the territories of the Lake of the Woods, Point Roberts, and the San Juan Islands, and to grant equal rights for 10 years to the fisheries. The fairest thing which can be said of the Right Honorable Sir John A. MacDonald is that he would be more at home in the company of Benedict Arnold than he could be in the presence of such men as George Washington. Anyone purporting him as the father of Confederation has little knowledge in this matter.